Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Testing. Okay, I got mine.
How about me? How do I sound?
I don't know, but I got the little bars going.
So. Do I have bars going?
You got bars.
Heck yeah, we're live.
Finally. Okay.
Welcome to the Jake and Branson in the Morning podcast. It's 12:35 Central Coast time, San Francisco, California.
You're in it. Just keep going.
This is our first mobile podcast.
Mine as well.
Series. This is my first podcast ever, period. So
it might not even get aired.
Yeah, or I could be a flop and just get a bunch of hate in the comment section.
I don't know if there is a comment section.
I was just telling Jake these would be so much better. Don't mind that noise, guys. We're in the work truck right now. We just got done doing some beef. No, but I was just telling Jake these would be so much better if there was a comment section to see the good and the bad, because I want to see the bad too. I think that's the fun part about social media. I want to see all the trash talk.
You can always just comment on the Instagram page. Tell us how much you hate it.
Yeah, or we were thinking maybe about putting it up on YouTube. Then you guys tell us how much you hate us there.
Definitely.
It's a great platform to tell people how bad they're doing. So,
that's the only way we can get better.
Yeah, how else will we improve? We're trying to get to Joe Rogan's level. A couple more subscribers and we'll be there.
Yeah, probably
so if
three
you guys
four,
are
yeah.
listening, subscribe and we should be there in no time.
Okay, so I gotta do that intro thing now. So just gonna bear with me on this one. Welcome to the Butcher's Bow podcast, where the hunt meets the harvest. I'm your host, Jake Dolger, and I'm excited to share my passion for hunting and butchering with you. With 12 years of experience in the field and in the shop, I've learned a thing or two about what it takes to be successful in both pursuits. On this podcast, we'll dive into the grit of hunting, from scouting, tracking, to shot placement and recovery. We'll also explore the art of game processing, from field dressing to the final cuts, and everything in between. But it's not just about the technical stuff. We're also here to share stories of adventure from hunting trips, as well as my friends and expert guests from the industry. We'll talk about gear, strategy, and we'll talk about lessons learned along the way. Whether you're a seasoned hunter or just starting out, whether you're a butcher or outdoorsman, or someone who just enjoys a good steak, I hope you'll join me on this journey and we'll explore the intersection of wildlife management, sustainable hunting practices, and the art of transforming wild game into delicious meals. So tune in, subscribe, and let's get started on this adventure together. I'm excited to share my knowledge, experience, and passion with you, and I look forward to hearing from you too. Let's get into it. So today, just another work day, but I'm here with Branson Medeiros, on arguably the biggest blacktail slayer I know.
Wow, what a reputation to have to live up to.
It's a hell of a title.
By the way, I like the intro. Good intro.
Not too wordy.
No, it's nice. That was the first time I've heard it, so I got my
well, that's only the second time I've recorded it.
Of it, so I like it a lot. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, thanks for being here today and give me some work to do.
Yeah, well, we are, like Jake said, we're working. So what we do most weekends is work. I'm a mobile butcher in San Luis Obispo. And, I've got a truck. We do pigs, lambs, beef, even buffalo and some oddball stuff here and there. But, Jake's my right-hand man. We both learned from the same guy in high school. Mr. Mark Clement, the great Mr. Mark Clement. And yeah, Mark has since moved on to Oregon. Jake's full time at Cal Poly, so weekends is what I got now. But we do big days on the weekend. We get a lot done, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely a big shoes to fill, and have to live up to the name that we've come to our place.
We didn't really know that Mark had this many clients. Over the years, he's kind of slowly passed them on to other people, but we didn't realize how many we'd absorb when Mark left. I would say probably almost half of the county Mark was doing. So now we're picking up the slack.
Have you noticed more new clients, more new people popping up on your list in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, for sure. COVID just changed everything. We used to have, you know, it seemed like you used to do the same clients every year. Be like, you know, your backyard beef, a couple pigs here and there, but repeat clients. And then once COVID happened, it went crazy. We started having a lot of people scared about the meat industry and just buying stuff, period. So people started raising their own stuff in their backyard, which is perfect for us because, yeah, that's what we specialize in, is custom slaughtering. So we started getting a lot of people that kind of got scared by the pandemic. And then I think what happened was they learned that they liked it, and cost-wise really wasn't much more, product-wise much better, and they stuck with it.
So you think it was just that overall fear of food security?
Yeah, we're at the point where there was like people couldn't find toilet paper and paper towels, and it was pretty bad. Yeah. People were loading up the Priuses full of paper towels, and they just couldn't buy stuff at hand. We've never, especially in the United States, we never have to deal with not being able to go to a grocery store and buying something. We have everything at our fingertips, so when you don't have it, you start freaking out a little bit. And that's what happened. Also, we live in a county that's got, we're not in a poor county. We live in an area where there's a lot of people are doing very well. So, I think that has a lot to do with it too. People have the means to do it. And we also live in an ag community where kind of a green revolution, I would say, happened. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but like,
it's definitely more agriculture-based in our area. Yeah, a lot of tourism, but mostly rooted in agriculture.
Yes, and a lot of sustainable agriculture. A lot of
interest in the sustainable agriculture movement as a whole.
Exactly. And I think the custom stuff falls right into that.
So I know how the process works, but a lot of the people that are listening right now probably aren't familiar. How exactly would a normal, typical job go for you from start to finish, from calling in the booking all the way to the delivery, which we're on our way to go do?
Yeah, well, let's do today, for example, since it's fresh on our mind. These clients each had 2 beef, and they got a hold of me well in advance, usually a month or two in advance. And at that point, they're correlating with the shops who are going to cut and wrap the product, because our job is only kill, clean, quarter, and deliver. So they're correlating with the shops when to bring them in, scheduling all that. Once they get the green light from the shop, they set it up with us. And on big days like this, Jake and I will schedule a time to show up. We'll take care of our portion of the job. That includes what I just stated, dispatch, getting into carcass form, cleaned and delivered. And after that, our process is done. So a lot of these places have different requests. Some of our jobs will be, hey, I'm not home, show up and take care of this beef for us, leave everything there, and take the beef to the shop for me. And then there's jobs like the one we just came from, where this gal had 2 beef, and she wanted to keep everything edible off of both of them, including insides, which if we leave for them on site, we can do that. So we can leave. She had friends coming to get the head and the tripe and the menudo. She kept the liver, the heart, the tail, the tongue, and then she even kept lungs and spleens for her dog. So that's kind of the beauty of the custom side, is we can really do whatever people ask. And in terms of a normal day, sometimes we don't have normal days. Sometimes it's kind of crazy off the wall stuff. interesting requests, interesting locations. Not all of them are always the easiest location, but I would say that's kind of why people hire us, is because, you know, either they don't have a trailer, they don't know how they would go about getting the animal taken care of, or
something. More flexibility, to adhere and adapt to the environment at hand or the situation if you have a wounded animal or one that is not going to make it.
Yeah, and then sometimes we even have emergencies. Like Jake was just saying, they're not going to make it. We get a call for an emergency to where, you know, if the animal's still standing and they know it's probably not going to make it, but it's not sick for any reason that it can't be consumed for human consumption, we can go take care of it quickly. They don't have to worry about transporting it or anything.
And like you were saying earlier, it seems that the custom side allows the owner of that animal to utilize it more fully from nose to tail, which is really popular nowadays in that sustainable
agriculture arena. Absolutely. And they're going from hot carcass to the fridge with all their offal product, and then straight to the cooler with their carcass. A lot of people are interested in the non-transportation side of what we do. Because, as you know, Jake, but maybe our listeners don't know, if you go and you do one on site, there's no added stress of transportation. So if you haul one and it's a naturally high stress animal, they have a potential of being a dark cutter, which means the meat turns like a cherry red color, and it's not desirable appearance-wise, although it's still edible.
Right, and can affect other qualities like marbling and tenderness.
Exactly. And so that's what people are trying to avoid when they call Jake or I, is to do it with the least amount of stress as possible. And then they don't have to worry about trailering them. Mm-hmm. And I would say cost-wise, there's really not enough of a difference. If you haul them to a butcher, you could save where we're at. Could be different everywhere. Where we're at, you could save $50, but with the price of fuel nowadays, it's six one, half dozen the other, really, which way you decide to have them harvested. Harvested? Are we going to call it harvesting?
Slaughter, we're going to call it harvest, slaughtering. Same thing.
I don't know how politically correct we're going to be.
I see no difference.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Just enough.
Exactly. The humane handling side of things obviously has a much easier avenue with going with the custom side. The animals and its home field, home court advantage. It's definitely more comfortable there. That's where it eats. It's where it sleeps. Its normal movement patterns take place. It's not contained in a trailer for a certain duration being transported. That always stresses an animal, no matter how seasoned they are in that.
Yeah, and they could spend time at the kill pen, too, at the facility.
Yeah, intermingling with other animals where they could actually catch a zoonotic disease or get roughed up with another animal
because
they're not getting along. Yeah, injury or bruising to the meat. That's never good.
Yeah,
there's a lot of factors that a lot of people don't consider or know to consider when trying to pick between the two options.
And it's definitely, I notice a trend where if the customer is going to consume the animal themselves and it's for personal family use, those people are much more concerned about the quality we do in terms of the processing portion of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of USDA clients, if they're bringing in five or six head at a time, it's not that they don't care about how it's taken care of, but just simply the quantity that they're having processed at a time is not something we really do. So they want to take it to a place that can do five or six at a time.
Because they have those five or six ready all at the same time. They don't want to burn more feed or work with the other logistics of trying to schedule different dates.
Exactly. And also a lot of it's going to either boxed beef, quarter beef, because USDA can be resold. What we do cannot be resold.
Right. I think a lot of the disconnect that they have too as producers, not that they don't care about the quality of their product, but at the end, it doesn't end up on their plate where they would not necessarily hear about a bad experience if someone wasn't willing to reach out to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas
exactly.
If it was for their own personal use, they would understand the ramifications of what goes into it because they're the end consumer themselves.
Yeah. You know, what do you like more? Do you like, because now you're in a, Jake's been in a shop for, well, in a managerial position, in a shop. Managerial, is that, did I get the right word there?
Managerial?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. In a shop for the last, almost 6 years now?
Yeah, about.
So, he's about 50-50 where I'm only out in the field killing. Would you say you like both? Do you like them the same? Or if you could kill all the time, would you kill all the time?
That's a tough question. I really enjoy being out in the field. I like being outside. I enjoy the different variety that comes with mobile slaughter. You're going to a different place, different location every time. You get to see different people and talk to them, work with different animals with different temperaments and different qualities. Whereas inside, there's a lot more repetition. Everything is very similar to what you did the day before. You have the variety of changing, via processes. Some days we'll be slaughtering beef inside. Other days we'll be fabricating cuts. Another day we'll be making a value-added product like summer sausage or a smoked sausage. So there's the variation there. I do enjoy the different facets of butchery and that I can get better in each of those processes itself. It gives me time to focus and actually learn more about each of those processes. Whereas with slaughter, I think it's a good avenue to kind of decompress because I know the role, I can fill that role easily, and I can kind of shut my brain off.
Yeah, and what we do is so free too. I mean, there's besides, having a client every once in a while stand there and watch us the whole time, which we don't really mind at all. Mm-hmm. It's
especially
so free.
Especially when they're interested.
Yeah, that's true. If you have a client that's asking good questions and they're interested and they want to know stuff, we love sharing that information because we kind of nerd out on that stuff too.
It's the same way we're teaching a class. If you have students that are interested and engaged with the material, it's a lot more enjoyable as a teacher than just being a demonstration for people that really don't want to be there.
Yeah. And the best is when this happens to us all the time too, when there's kids there and there's young kids there that are old enough to kind of know what's going on and, or maybe they were raised on a ranch. Or they have an uncle or a grandpa who hunted or something. And the kids are the best. They have the best questions.
They just say the most off-the-wall things.
It's so, no filter. They say the most off-the-wall stuff. They're interested in the stuff that we like to talk about,
Because of kids nowadays don't get to see either because it's behind closed doors and no one asks the question of where my food came from.
Yeah, exactly. We always say it's the best biology class they'll ever take. Yeah. And it's amazing that, and everybody has the right, obviously, to choose what they wish to expose their kids to, but it's amazing how many people don't want their kids to see it, too. We get both. We get people that really, that make their kids go watch because they're like, hey,
this is important.
If you're going to eat this stuff, you need to know where it comes from and how to do it the right way. And then there's people that say, hey, can you do it on Monday morning at 9:30 because I want my kids to be at school? And either way, we don't mind. We say yes, no problem. But
yeah, I think everyone's ready for that at different times in their lives.
For sure.
When they can actually grip the understanding of the gravity of the situation, it is for a purpose and a purpose that is needed for our lives.
Yeah, I would say they got to be old enough to see the cause and effect of it.
Exactly. Sure.
There goes our beef racks again, just shifting.
Yeah, windy road. A lot of traffic.
we work out of a Chevy Silverado, like a rock. 3/4-ton, 4-door Chevy with a specifically designed slaughter rack on it. So our ag teacher, Mr. Clement, Mark, the guy that taught us how to do it, in the 80s had his shop class build him one. And if you can imagine an H-frame boom. I don't know really. There's not really another industry truck you could compare it to.
It's almost like a super overbuilt ladder rack that extends.
Yeah, if you can imagine a ladder rack of a standard work truck, and then you just added another top rack to it that was extended out the back, up and out the back of the truck via hydraulics, that's kind of what we're working with. So when the truck's all set up, the boom's at a 40-degree angle off the back of the truck, so the animal is essentially hanging right off of our tailgate. We do a lot of the work to start. Once we have the animal down, we'll bring them out, and with ground racks, or we'll call them chucks or blocks, we'll get them on their backs, and that's how we'll start it. So we'll start by taking the legs off. We'll make our seams, which is where we're going to start skinning from. We'll split the brisket, get them hooked up to the gambrel. Once we get them in the air, then we can gut them in the air, finish taking the hide off, and then split them. Some shops want them split in halves. Some shops want them split in half and then quartered. And that's just determined based on the height of the facility.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, the rail height for the receiving and how they're going to store them.
That's right, rail height, yeah. So where we're going right now, which we're going to take a little intermittent break from the podcast to deliver these two beef we have in the bed of the truck. He's got high rails. And this is a newer shop that was just built. State-of-the-art facility, state-inspected, and high rails. So he takes them in halves. Every other shop in our county takes them in quarters because they're older shops. And, you know, unless it was a horse processing facility, really nobody had high rails. Huh?
Not really. Yeah, unless they put some serious money into it.
At Pauly, you have high rails.
Yes, Pauly's high rail as well. And the only benefit to hanging in half, besides just space efficiency of square footage usage,
yeah.
Not quartering them until the day you cut them, you do save probably a steak, but not much. You're not going to be trimming as much between the two because you're cutting them fresh.
The New York strip and the ribeye side?
Yeah, where they meet. But so it's real marginal, but I do like the efficiency of hanging in half just for the sake of, one, you have less pieces to keep track of, so they're not going to get switched around on rails.
Yeah, that's true.
And then also you can hang more beef in the same area square foot.
Yeah.
So that has been really convenient and efficient.
That's about it, right? I mean, I can't really think of any other
Pretty
reason
much.
You'd want to hang
Yeah,
in
if you go to quarter them, you're just making more surface area with that cut where you break between the 12th, 13th for mold growth to happen.
Yeah, that's now when you break, when you break them, are you going to quarter them before you start to work them in the shop?
Yes, so typically what I'll do is I'll break a four-quarter off, and then I'll work on just that four-quarter and then move to the hind quarter later on. I actually let a hind quarter hang another week.
And how do you guys make that transition?
You're able to get a butcher block table underneath the front quarter, and then you break it down onto that.
Gotcha.
And then the hind quarter can come down with a rail assist.
And you said you hang the hind quarter another week. Why would you do that?
The only reason we do that is for our class schedule. 1 week we'll have a laboratory section focusing on four quarter fabrication, and then the following week the next lab section will be hind quarter fabrication.
Understood.
So if we're not doing it for a lab, we're just doing it for normal production or employee training, we could do the same, do an entire half beef in 1 day.
How many labs you guys end up doing a week?
So we have, let's see, I got two on Tuesday, one Wednesday, and two on Thursday. Yeah, so five.
Oh, so you could
sections.
Have multiple in 1 day.
Exactly, yep.
Gotcha.
Just this quarter.
All ag science students?
All animal science.
Animal science students.
Yeah, but that's the only reason we divvy up the front and hind quarter sections into different weeks is just for first class schedules. If I was to do it for normal production, we would just continue from the front quarter, then to go to the hind quarter, immediately do one half, then the other.
Yeah, no benefit in terms of quality or process or anything.
Not at all.
And Cal Poly, for our listeners, Cal Poly is largely educational facility. So as they do have a retail store, it's not their focus. Their retail store is not their focus. They are happy and thrilled to sell product to local customers who just want to come in and buy stuff. But really I don't want to speak for Jake here, but it's really largely educational, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's an educational facility, and the sales of our products are just a byproduct of that educational process.
Gotcha.
It's basically just the end to a different means.
And you know what? This is off topic, but I got to get something off my chest. the washboard roads that we run into in our job
terrible.
Is just off the hook. I mean, we can't even get a podcast recorded.
No, nope, not even.
Of these washboarded
I think
roads.
You need an alignment.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's getting bad, it's we always joke we should charge more for the washboarded roads, but we're at the meat shop right now, so we can't really hit this guy for much. but yeah, we are going to, what do you think, Jake? Should we take a little break and get these beef off and fire back up on the way back to town?
Yeah, let's get this beef in the cooler, get them chilled down, and then we can start the pot back up.
Awesome.
And with the power of editing, we are back.
Wow, we never left.
Never really. It was only just a fraction of a second.
Yeah. So we got some beef unloaded and talked to Garrett for a while. It's always fun talking to Garrett. We love Garrett.
Yeah.
Garrett Roth, that is. Ranchita Meat Company. Yeah. What takeaways do we have from that? Beef are cold.
Beef are cold. Beer is cold.
Beer is cold. Yeah.
Yeah. Just making sure we do everything the right way so that we don't mess up someone's product down the road.
Yeah, he wasn't there at first, so we were kind of on our own unloading. And how all these unloads go is there's usually a winch to a rail outdoors that you can get them out of the truck and get them onto a rail. In this situation, into a hanging room, you would say, non-chilled hanging room for a wash, lactic acid dip, and then a drip, and then from there into the cooler, and that's the end of our job for the day. That's when we're technically we're done.
Yeah, signed, sealed, delivered.
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to kind of paint you into a corner or into a box earlier, because you do a lot of things. How exactly would you describe yourself? What are you? What's your job? Or multiple jobs?
Oh, well, full. I would say career, job, career, this.
Mobile harvest.
Mobile harvest,
mobile
yeah.
Slaughter,
mobile
yeah.
harvest, for sure. Takes up most of my days, especially in the summertime. Most work's in the summertime. And then, you know, scattered work throughout the winter, the rainy season, the holiday season. But then on the side, I have a small percentage of my income. Some is hay. So we have a family ranch out in Creston, California. And we are a very small operation. So I make enough hay to kind of sustain my 12-cow cow herd, keep a couple steers back every year, sell the calves, and then the hay we grow there feeds them through the drier months, per se. And whatever hay I have left over, I'll sell, which is usually not a lot, but it's enough for some fun money. But no, that's really it. Those are my three kind of money makers. But by far, this is my main job. You know, spent a lot of time hunting, obviously. So hope I'll fit in on this podcast. Well, I think we'll have some good, some fun hunting stuff to talk about for sure. We've got a lot of good hunting stories. Spent a lot of time duck hunting this time of year, a lot of time deer hunting the other time of the year. But yeah, young family now. We have our first daughter who's a year and a half now, so that's getting really fun. But yeah, busier now than I've ever been in my life. And the family, I mean, having kids, and Jake will tell you this because he's got three now. That's a full-time job too. And yeah, it still takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. No one tells you how much energy it takes to raise kids, but
no, it's just it's the requirement.
Yeah.
It is what it is. You can't really change it. So
yeah. But I think since I had a kid, I think was for the better for me, for me and my wife. Sometimes I wish we would have done it a little earlier, but
it makes you change perspectives for sure.
Definitely.
Realist priorities in a better, healthier way.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And honestly, focus a lot more on work now because I just want to have money and want to have extra money in case, you know, the
want
family
that financial security.
Exactly. And you know, when you're younger and you don't have kids, we're just out butchering for fun money and
yeah, you're not
money
really worried about
money
what's going to happen. Whereas if you have a family, you have people to provide for and you want their future and their security to be a non-issue. You don't want it to worry about
exactly.
It. Yeah. Whereas when you're by yourself, you'll figure it out, kind of thing.
Yeah, and the only person affected is you.
At the end of the day, you're responsible for your own stuff, but as now you're responsible for other people's lives that you could totally mess up.
Yeah, so. And speaking to this job, asking about jobs, I've taken this job a lot more seriously in the last few years for multiple reasons, that being one of them, but new regulations too. So now, before, as a custom-exempt mobile slaughter, you didn't have to have any state requirements, or you didn't have to pay for any licensing, I should say. You're a registered on a list. People can find your name online. The state knew about you. But recently, some laws have passed to where the same as kind of a custom shop, we have to have mobile slaughtering license. So they're going to monitor what we do, how we do it, our processes, cleanliness, and stuff like that. So kind of unfortunate. We were lucky to get away with not doing that for a long time, but
just more red tape.
The government will get their money one way or another.
They want their cut. That's for sure.
And, I don't want to talk ill of any of this, but we never got a call to tell us that this licensing was a thing.
It's a very abrupt transition out of nowhere.
Yeah, no letters to any of the people on the existing list. They could have easily sent a letter out to everybody on the existing list telling them that, hey, you guys, we got some new laws coming into effect. We need you guys to be licensed for this stuff.
Yeah, but that would take time. No notice. Yeah.
And also,
just wake up one day.
While we're on the topic.
You're a criminal.
While we're on the topic, you can't find anybody that knows what the heck's going on.
No one knows. So everyone's got their wires crossed. They're all full of misinformation, and they're making up as they go. Or they are new and have no idea what you're talking about.
Found a lot of that. Found out a lot of new people are working at these offices I'm calling. So 4 or 5 calls later, I got in contact with someone who knew some information. So we're on the right track. Got my paperwork in. Now just waiting for an in-person visit from a USDA inspector, I guess it would be now. So not USDA, California CDFA? Department of Food and Agriculture inspector.
Yeah. So many different acronyms.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. All it really means is you have to give the government some of your money.
Yeah. And they sign off that you that you get your money.
This guy paid us, so he can work.
Yeah, you just need a receipt. Yeah. That's all they care about.
We're just out here trying to make a living.
Your name on the list is your receipt.
Yeah, that's right. All right, you have permission to go kill.
Yeah, which I don't see. There's no possible way they can enforce that.
And
there's just too many moving factors and variables, and it makes no sense.
Yeah, and you can't even get any answers. I mean,
a logistics standpoint, I mean, it's very similar to the Prop 12.
Yeah.
It's going to be either a self-certification, or it would take a army of people to patrol and investigate and enforce these laws.
From a establishment that doesn't have a ton of resources.
Exactly. They're already understaffed, as is.
Yeah.
Ill-equipped and understaffed.
Yep.
And it doesn't help when their communication is very poor. They just can't. It takes a simple memo across the board. That's all I'm saying.
It's hard to know if you're doing it right.
Can we
get everyone
on the same page so we can understand what's required of us?
Yeah. And Garrett's another good example of Garrett Roth, the shop we just delivered to. It's another great example of a guy who wanted to do it the right way. And went through all the legal steps and processes to do it the right way. And did like 4 or 5 unnecessary steps because he just couldn't get the right answer from anybody.
No one.
And I understand. Niche industry. Really small. Kind of a... not a lot of money flowing through this industry, you know. It's a good living
trade.
For the people that do it. But it's just not a big industry. I don't think they are ever going to have enough resources to keep a good eye on it. But in the meantime, we'll pay our money and be legal.
Yeah, do our best to be.
Yeah. I made it a point to, in the process of getting all this information, I made it a point that they would know my name for sure. I called back several times until I could get the right answers, the right information, the right paperwork, all that stuff, just because you don't want to be the guy that's gets blindsided and never tried to get his license or anything like that, so...
Well, and it just shows you're being proactive and that you're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Whereas other people might just try to fly under the radar.
Yeah, and you work USDA slaughterer. So Jake has done both. Jake's done USDA slaughtering and custom exempt slaughtering, which is what we're doing right now. the USDA side, tell us a little bit about that. They were on a mobile unit. So the USDA harvesting would be done at a ranch, and then they would transport them back to the shop. Kind of made for a kind of a kludgy setup, wouldn't you say?
Definitely a logistics nightmare. A lot of moving parts, a lot of potential issues that became real to fruition issues. Mobile is not ideal when it comes to federally inspected product. It just throws a wrench into everything, and a lot of small, minute details can be blown out of proportion.
And why would someone want to do a beef USDA? I think we touched on it a little bit earlier, but what would be the reason for someone doing USDA?
The only reason you'd want to do a beef USDA is if you were doing resale on a interstate level.
Gotcha.
That would be the only thing. And if you're doing cuts by, you know, selling by the cut.
Yeah, so
if you had a box beef program online where you wanted to ship anywhere in the United States, then you would need to do USDA. Same goes for any other species or value-added product, being smoked product, cooked, shelf-stable, non-shelf-stable, all those things. So bacon, ham, smoked sausage, any of those further processed products you would need federally inspected to sell on an interstate commerce level.
And then what about our average client that wants to sell a quarter beef to his cousin live? Well, let's not say live, but non-packaged. His cousin is going to buy from him the entire quarter and give the cut instructions to a processor. Does that need to be USDA?
In my personal opinion, no, I don't believe that needs to be USDA.
And that's kind of what I was getting at. There is a fine line with this, and there's some laws now that are coming into effect with how to split up beef in terms of if someone's going to buy it from you.
Well, and if you're doing it through a quality shop, there's not going to be any difference between that and inspection versus just a few different pages of paperwork and records.
Yeah.
You're going to end up with the same quality product at the end of the process.
Yep. And so we have a lot of clients that the way they get around it is they sell the beef live whole. And if you sell the beef live whole before we come, then it's being harvested for the new owner and there's no sales happening post harvest or packaging.
Right.
So we just show up and we're doing that job for the new buyer. In the same regard, some of the new laws are covering some of that. So now we have to be licensed meat inspector, or I have to have a licensed meat inspector as an employee. And that's just another thing, another requirement that we need that, maybe it may apply to 10% of our clients, but that's the clients we're talking about here where, you know, the families may be getting half of that beef.
Well, what I
friends are getting half of that beef. So we're required to be a licensed meat inspector.
Yeah, what I want to see after that whole another step in licensing is what actual effect will it have on the ground? What is going to be prevented being having that certification? Are we going to see a drastic, you know, change in what is a licensed meat inspector supposed to do if they didn't deem that animal viable for human consumption?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as I go through this process, we'll be able to kind of update our listeners on the new rules. The licensed meat inspector one is brand new for us. So that's a good question. Am I supposed to condemn them? And at what point am I supposed to condemn them? What's contamination? Is it going to be the same standards as USDA?
Well, and at that point too, because I've had experience with both, I have told customers, hey, I would not eat this liver. It looks like it has, you know, some kind of infection or parasite in it. Let's discard it. It's all at our own discretion.
Yeah.
or at the owner's discretion, honestly. That's where it should lie. It's the owner's liability at that point. You're providing a service. You can provide the knowledge and give them the information to allow them to make an informed decision.
Yeah, you can't tell them what to do. No, but you can just give them the information and let them decide. In that regard, we talked about USDA being for resale and custom being for self-consumption. What goes on differently during the USDA process that's different than what we're doing? The actual process itself.
So the only process itself that's different would be AFMI, which is a final meat inspection. So it's going to be at the final rail before the carcass goes into chilling, before it gets washed, before it gets any lactic acid treatment. an employee will look it over and trim off any potential contamination, be it hair, ingesta, milk, fecal, and basically just removing any potential contamination that's visible on the carcass. So that's for all visible contaminations. Then you have to have proper countermeasures, such as hot water rinse, a drip dry, and then a lactic acid at a proper percentage mixture that can counteract for all those non-visible contaminations that aren't picked up during those trimmings.
And so, who's making the call on whether or not it's clean enough?
So the final call would be from a USDA inspector during a zero tolerance inspection.
And they're on site for this during a kill?
Correct.
They have to be there the day of the kill to do
correct.
That inspection?
Correct. Yes. They have to be present. Other than that, the process is very the same. I mean, one's inside, one's outside, so you do have environmental factors, but it's all very similar.
Yeah, and if I'm right here, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't want you using water in the USDA facility, so everything contamination-wise is, like you said, it's trimmed away.
Yes, it's trimmed away. Water is not used. They don't even like water being put on the outside of the cattle post-mortem. Because they claim that it would move and just further disperse fecal, which is possible. That is true. But also those other countermeasures, such as trimming, hot water, and lactic acid, also counter those potential concerns and contaminations.
Yeah, yeah.
So as long as you're doing your best to keep the animal clean and then taking proper countermeasures, you're going to end up with the same quality product at the end. It's just how you implement those countermeasures and what is what determines your final quality of food safety for your product.
Yeah. Yeah.
If your countermeasures aren't properly, your interventions aren't properly introduced and don't control your hazards, then that's a different kind of issue. That's an implementation issue, not a program issue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and yeah, you're more educated on this whole cutting and wrapping side, including the USDA side, than I am. Would you say that the process that a beef is killed USDA is inherently cleaner or safer than what a custom kill would be?
From what I've seen, it really depends on who's performing the service.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
You could have someone that is USDA that just doesn't care and performs a poor quality.
And in the same
service.
Light, you could have someone who's custom who's, dirty.
Mm-hmm. It depends on who is doing it and who's doing the work. At the end of it, the government regulation is supposed to do away with all that to make sure they meet the regulatory standards. However, it depends on who the inspector is and what job is being performed.
Yeah.
There's people that work for the regulatory agency that do not hold the same standards that they should.
Yeah. And that's the big variable is that it's all still done by humans. So, mm-hmm. There's still room for error. But luckily in the meat industry, contamination, especially long-term, is so few and far between, really.
Well, there's so many different steps that are put into place to control these possible hazards. It's very redundant. That way, if something wasn't caught at one step, it's caught at another. And that way, we can ensure that we have a safe food supply. It's the same insurance that you had if you were to do something yourself, like wild game processing. If you do it properly, you know it's done properly because you did it yourself. You can have a much higher percentage of acceptability knowing that you did everything and you possibly could to ensure a safe product that you're giving to your family, yourself, your friends. And that way you can ensure that you have a safe food product because you did everything by your own hands.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I tell people all the time. The more you can learn to do by yourself, not only the more satisfying it is because, man, it just feels good to, I mean, being a hunter and a butcher, it feels good to process all the stuff on your own. And then when you pull it out of the freezer to make dinner for your family, it's kind of cool knowing that you're feeding your family. Kind of manly knowing that you're feeding your family,
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
You took the proper steps to then provide your family with something that is necessary.
Yeah.
You didn't just go buy it from a grocery store. It's basically not a cop-out. You put a labor of love
into gathering or raising that resource to share with people you care about.
Yeah, and you're talking a core necessity. Water and food. I mean, that's what we need
water,
to live.
Shelter.
And shelter, yep. Yeah.
That's where you can actually provide for a family.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. It's rewarding, and we have a lot of clients that know that and ask a lot of questions of, you know, how can I do this myself? Would you be willing to teach me? We love doing that. We love teaching people.
Or we talk about it almost all the time, is this the sheer difference in quality or of a dining experience between a farm-raised local beef versus one that you would get from a big box store? You would be hard-pressed to find, or you'd have to pay a lot more to get that higher quality beef from a large packing plant versus what you would be getting raising your own steer at home.
Yeah, and we hear it too often. Man, this is getting expensive. Why don't I just go buy meat from the store? Well, sure, maybe nowadays you're not really saving much money. You might save a little bit of money raising your own at home. But the difference in quality, like Jake said, to go buy what you just raised would be astronomically more expensive, because young choice beef is just, you're really going to pay for it retail, you know.
And even then, there's variance between just the different providers that raise, you know, a quality beef. You could go anywhere from, you know, a choice Angus to you could try to find a premium like Wagyu. It depends on what you want that dining experience to be like. But when you raise it at home, you know exactly what that animal was fed and cared for through its entire life up to that processing, and even through processing if you do it yourself.
Yeah, and it's not like, it's not like making, a corporation that's going to be making beef. It's not like a corporation making candy or making chips or making, their processes are so set that nothing can go wrong during the process of creation. But when you're talking about a live animal with feed rations, antibiotics, if applicable, conditions, dewormer, all this stuff that goes into it, there's so many variables. The end product can be often so different. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Just getting that consistency is a huge challenge. But if you raise two steers a year, you're going to be fairly consistent.
Yeah, and most importantly, just know what they're eating, know what they're getting. We're going to take a quick break here to use the gas station and then come back. And I want to, I think probably running out of time, but I got a couple questions for you, Jake.
All right.
And we're back.
Yep.
That was my fault. My Zen inventory was low.
Yep.
To stock up on my Zens.
It is Sunday, so yeah.
You know, football Sunday, too. What's your preferred method of take? If you had a haltered steer, would you prefer to use a long rifle open sight, long rifle with a scope, or a bolt gun?
So the steer's halter broke.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Tame enough that you have the option to use a bolt gun, whether it be...
Am I on my own, or do I have someone else?
You have help, but you're the shooter. You're responsible for a humane shot.
If it's haltered and the steer, is it calm temperament? What are we talking about?
Calm temperament.
I go captive bolt on that one.
I think so too.
Yeah, up close and personal. I'm a short guy. It'd be hard for me to get a long rifle up at that angle. unless I did like a side shot or something like that. But definitely want to be, got that short radius on the captive bolt would be helpful there.
Yeah, and the captive's nice just because if you can get contact on the head, you know where the shot's going. Mm-hmm. And then what about a waspy one? What about a crazy steer running circles in the pen? Open sight or
how far are we
scoped
talking?
Rifle? 25 yards. It's about average for us, I would say. 20
yeah.
yards is a good average shot for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, I'd go open sight on that one.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then...
the full field of view on everything.
Yeah, I'd agree. And then older cattle. Older cattle, would you prefer, now when we go into older cattle, we always step up to a 30-30 or a 308.
Yeah, some 30 caliber round.
Something, that's just what Jake and I have, 30-30, 308. We any really any caliber above, probably a 243 is going to do it.
Definitely.
In terms of velocity and projectile size.
So how old are we talking? Over 5 years?
Yeah, we're talking old, those old 8-year-old, 10-year-old cows that we're doing.
And, or a buffalo.
Or a buffalo. Could often be in a bigger pin, but let's just say 25 yards, like we're taking our normal shot.
So no problem with a 308. But my preferred, if I had a choice, if I could pick anything off the rack, I would have to go 30-30 lever action.
Open sight or scope?
Open sight.
Gotcha. Is that, we know Mark has that gun.
That is my preferred.
Would you say, since you've had it and tried it and know it, that's the one you're going to pick up?
Yep, that's the one I enjoy the most.
Gotcha. See, on the other side, I think I'm going scoped. I just think it's what you know. So when I started with Mark, I would always shoot the open sights. But then when I started on my own, the only gun I had was my scoped 22 mag with a 3x9 on it. I learned to use that, and now I don't think I'll go back. But Jake made a suggestion the other day that I think would be the perfect slaughter gun, which would be a bolt action 22 mag with a 1x6 optic. And that way, because often these steers are very, very close, and with a 3-power optic, it really fills up the scope with forehead of the beef. So I think a 1x6 would be the way to get around that. But I still like the scope, just for the range, because every once in a while we got a 40-yard beef, and a 22 mag still has plenty of velocity for a 40-yard beef. But I don't know. I think just because I've got used to the scope. I think that's the difference.
Well, my whole school of thought on it is I just like to see and survey the entire area, the entire situation, what's happening. If you got people moving around, if you know, you want to make sure you have a clear backstop around the animal. If you have other animals in the pen, you want to see where their movement is so you're not, you know, engaging them and by accident. I like having a full open field of view. And that's only when we're up close and personal with these animals. Obviously, if we're hunting, then you're going to want a scope rifle because we're shooting at distance, long range, precision.
And when Jake says hunting, that's what we call it when we have when we have an animal that is actively running from us.
Yeah, so, out of containment in a large paddock or pasture.
We always recommend to our clients to have them contained in a small enough area that we can dispatch of them humanely. That's not always the case. And some of our clients either don't take it seriously and or don't have the option or want to work for the option. So we end up having to do these bigger field kills where sometimes they're up on a hill or they're in the corner of the pasture and we end up hunting is what we call it. And yeah, the scope makes all the difference on those.
But even similar to hunting wild game, I mean, with a bow, I like a clear field of view with my scope. I like that single or double pin, maybe triple max. I don't know. People do 5-7 pin setups. It's just too cluttered for me. I like having that full field of view.
Yeah, you've always been a 1-2 pin guy ever since you started shooting the bows.
I just like being able to see what's going on so I know where I can more effectively put shot placement. There's less likelihood of trying to, forgetting where you're holding and making a improper shot.
I will say the times that I've made poor shots on deer or missed deer, it's because there was a lot of pins there. And I just chose the wrong one. In my mind, I thought I was choosing the right yardage pin, but there was so much going on, I just chose the wrong one. So I see that.
And from other people too, I've heard that just time and time again. So I think that's instilled a fear with me that I'm going to accidentally hold the wrong pin and make a non-fatal shot on animal.
Yep, and so that's the worst.
That fear is putting this in me that I need to make that clean shot. I need simplicity. I need a clear field of view. I need one aiming point. That's what I need to make it a successful shot.
And are you ranging and sliding your slider? So
almost all the time, but every now and then I do practice my holds for a certain gap. So I'll range something at 35 yards, but I have my slider set to 50, and I'll use my subsequent pins above that, and I'll judge the gap. Been trying to get better at that. Obviously, at work, though, we don't range anything.
No,
there's
never.
There's no time.
Nope, never.
Not practical. Not at all. I mean, you could keep a rangefinder with you, and it would be pretty silly.
Yeah, and that's kind of why we use a 22 mag. We always go up in caliber on what we're using. So if we have anything that's even on the edge of being old or being a bull or being Well, I don't know how you're on the edge of being a bull. You're a bull or you're not.
Yeah.
if we think for any reason they might not go down with the mag, we're going to go to the 30-30.
A little extra insurance, a little more grain weight, and more speed.
Yes, exactly. And Mr. Mark Clement, the great Mr. Mark Clement, used to use a 22 long rifle for a long time for everything.
Not
until
advisable.
He ran into 8 bulls in one day. And he said he emptied a whole box trying to get him down.
Went to war.
And that was the day that he switched to a 22 mag. So
we learned from that.
Yes, we had wiser before.
I don't want a day like that.
No.
I don't think anyone does.
No, we keep a 22 long rifle, but it's for to avoid over-penetration on lambs.
Especially if they're in a flock together, because you can easily over-penetrate a lamb's skull. And
yeah, and you have collateral, some collateral damage.
Never fun.
Uh-uh. Seen it, haven't done it, but I've seen it.
Seen it, yep.
Same. Wouldn't want to do it, but I saw it.
Do my best to avoid that.
Yeah.
Learn by others' mistakes, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I miss Mark.
Me too.
We have to get him on one of these podcasts.
Somehow, some way, if he comes to visit, yeah, I'll have to do that. It's going to be a long one.
He'd be unhinged, man. Be a lot of edits.
It'll be fine. I'll make him work.
Well, cool. Right. I had fun.
Yeah, me too.
We got a lot more coming down the pipe too, I think.
I'm sure there'll be others.
We probably just almost did an hour, and I feel like we could talk for 4 or 5 more. So,
yeah, we're 55 minutes right now.
Is that a pretty good podcast time?
That's my longest.
Hey, man, setting records.
Right off the bat.
Right off the bat. Setting the bar high.
That's all you can do.
Nice.
Well, appreciate you coming on today. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for going on.
You helping me work all the time, and definitely couldn't do the big things without the help.
Yeah,
it's one of those things too where you can't just take anybody with you to help you because if you have to sit there and tell somebody what to do every step of the way, you're not going to get it done faster. You're going to go slower actually. And then on top of that, you throw in knife work.
The percentage
of people that can do knife work is so low.
Well, and they become a liability at that point.
Yeah. Live rounds, sharp knives, heavy items.
Yeah, and someone brand new just doesn't.
No, not at all. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me. Look forward to coming back. Look forward to doing this podcast.
Yeah, I'm really glad to be back. We'll have a different episode and we'll talk about something.
Yeah, we'll continue.
Talk about some crazy stories.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll start thinking about that with memory bank because we got some good ones.
On that note, all I have to say is sharpen your skills, elevate your game.
Awesome.